Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Good morning, Todd Zwillick here with Lynn Schur, filling in for John and Celeste. They're both out today. Well, it turns out we were wrong yet again when it comes to the amount of oil gushing into the Gulf of Mexico. A government panel now has doubled the estimate amount from yesterday, saying that before the latest attempt to cap the flow, every 8 to 10 days we were seeing the same amount of oil that spilled in the Exxon Valdez disaster. That's pouring into the Gulf every week. But is there a silver lining? Could there possibly be to this terrible dark cloud of oil that's pouring into the water and into the marshlands? Some say yes, and it comes in the form of calling for a major environmental policy overhaul. But who is leading the charge, and how realistic are their cries for change at this point? To help us answer that, we're joined by Ted Nordhaus, the chairman of the Breakthrough Institute, an environmental think tank out in California. We're also joined by Louise Story, finance and Wall Street reporter for our partner, The New York Times. She's here in the studio. But Ted, let me start with you. Many people are calling now, and it seems an obvious reaction. Many people are calling for a moratorium on offshore drilling, a ban on offshore drilling in the United States as the opening round of a new environmental movement in this country. That's not the kind of change that you're calling for, though.
Well, we may decide that we want to ban offshore drilling or we don't want to ban offshore drilling. But I think we also need to realize that oil is going to come from somewhere. And as long as we are as dependent upon oil in a whole variety of ways in our economy, if we're not getting it from the Gulf, we're going to get it from someplace else. And right now, as horrible as the Gulf spill is, the reality is that we really outsource a lot of the environmental and ecological damages associated with that oil use elsewhere to Nigeria or Ecuador or any number of other sacrifice zones that are not on the nightly news every day but have been equally devastated.
So it sounds in a way like some of the environmental chickens have come home to roost here since, as you say, we tend to outsource our pollution. But Ted, I want to bring it back domestically. And Ted, one of our producers spoke last night to Broward County, Florida Commissioner Kristen Jacobs, who just last month helped pass a bill down there in Broward. She believes we're currently at a crossroads and now's the time to seize the opportunity and change our country's dependence on oil. Now, Broward has a climate change action plan. I want to see if you agree with this.
We're thinking that maybe this is our time to finally pass legislation on the congressional side that moves the country into a new direction and moves us to a green economy, an economy that is not based on oil.
Now, Ted Nordhaus, Congress is going to be debating green energy and an energy bill, but nobody's really talking about moving completely to green energy, and oil is still in the mix. So what do you think about what Kristen Jacobs from Broward County, Florida is saying?
Well, I think it's a great idea, but I think someone needs to introduce that legislation, because the legislation that the climate and energy bill that Congress is debating now will do no such thing. In fact, if you look at sort of independent analysis of what the impact of that will be, it appears that in the very sort of best of circumstances over the next 2 to 2.5 decades, it will have an extremely modest impact on our dependence on oil, in the range of 3 to 6% less oil domestically over the course of the next 2.5 decades.
All right, well, let me, Ted, figure out how we're going to get to more wind power, more tide power, and more solar power. And I want to bring in Louise Story, who knows all about the business end of getting more investments in green technology. Louise, there are some prominent business groups who want to make money off this and are investing on the business side of a greener economy.
Right, Todd. You know, it's not just the environmentalists calling for greener technologies. Yesterday, you had a group of business leaders, including people like Bill Gates from Microsoft and Jeff Immelt from GE, Ursula Burns from Xerox. So we're talking, you know, top corporations. They met with the president, and they also held a press conference. They had some very dire warnings. So you had Bill Gates, who said, look, the U.S. has this goal of reducing energy emissions by 80% by 2050. He said, it's not going to happen if we don't increase our research budget for energy. The research budget in the energy department is actually lower now than it was in the 70s. So you think we talk about energy all the time, but the budget hasn't gone up. So this group of business leaders is saying you've got to at least triple that budget. It's just under $5 billion now, so that we can research things like nuclear fission and carbon capture, because, you know, you couldn't just shut down offshore drilling unless you really develop some technologies that can replace it.
Were they just waiting for something like this, Louise, to make the big push, or have they been pushing all along?
So these are business leaders that have been actually even pushing within their own businesses. You know, GE has put a lot of money and research into green technology, but they are seizing on this. I thought it was interesting something Ursula Burns from Xerox said. She said the incident in the Gulf just intensified this discussion, and she said, we have a fragile, brittle system today, and that system cannot be sustained as we go forward in a cost-effective way. So, now, serious warning.
Now, Luis, the president is fond of saying that switching to green technology in a meaningful way isn't about costing jobs, it's about gaining jobs. It's about investing in jobs and getting a new generation of green workers, or however you want to put it. Of course, he has to say that because right now we're all about jobs and a bad economy, so he wants to say it's about gaining jobs. Do these CEOs and Bill Gates and Xerox, do they have any answer for any kind of immediate job increase? Or are we talking about job increases over 30 years if we invest in the way they want to?
Well, look, the kind of research they're calling for, if you put money behind that research, there will be people who do the research. And GE has put significant funds into clean energy, and a lot of the projects that they've done have created jobs. So, you know, the question is, how does it net out versus the jobs lost, the jobs gained? But certainly research positions here in this country, you know, would be appealing to a lot of American workers.
Now, Luis, we're going to be talking about the World Cup in just a few minutes, and it's permeating the whole show. It's permeating my existence. But England and the U.S. facing off on Saturday. I know you're not a soccer expert, but you are a business expert, and the confrontation between the U.S. and England has entered the business world. The U.K. is telling the United States to back off on cracking down on BP's dividends. What's going on? What's going on with that? We want to get them to pay their pay us the dividends.
Well, the question is, can BP send money out the door to its shareholders that maybe they should use for cleanup? But keep in mind, this is not a clear-cut UK-US thing, because there are BP shareholders everywhere. They're American BP shareholders, so it's not as rival, you know, as much of a rivalry as the soccer.
Not as much. Well, we'll see if maybe they can settle it on the pitch. We're going to be talking about the World Cup in just a few minutes, and some of those confrontations take place on the world stage. Well, Louise Story from our partner, The New York Times, talking about the future of green technology. Ted Norhaus, chairman of the Breakthrough Institute and author of A Hero of the Environment in Time magazine. Thanks, Ted.